Welcome back to the Local Treble Clef, everybody. My name is Maylee, and today we are going to be interviewing the Dramedy.
And Dave Dramedy.
Dave Sorry. Dramedy. I didn't know if you wanted to go by your stage name or
Dave. No, Dave Dramedy. It's just me.
All right. And you're all the way on the East Coast right now, right?
That is very true. I'm on the East Coast or Midwest. I'm always confused by it because I am in Detroit right now, and Detroit is usually under the Midwest moniker. So, but I did play in Pittsburgh Sunday.
Oh, okay. And then tonight you're playing in Detroit.
Detroit, yes. On my Heartland Oblivion tour, which is the first time I've been playing, first time I played my music out in these area.
That's really cool. How fun is that?
Yeah. It's pretty fun, but it's also a lot of hard work because everything is very limited. Everything is very slim as far as what to do, where to go. I mean, fortunately, I did take some time out to plan some off days to do certain things, but even still, those off days become very limited with time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And are you kind of like on a van tour?
A van tour? Yes. I'm touring with this other artist named Thanatos. He's based in Chicago. So we're doing this tour together. I'm his tour support. And right now we have not really a van. It's more of like an SUV. It's
just us,
me and him. So there's not much equipment going on.
Yeah. And that's nice because then you can travel and see all the places while you're traveling.
Yeah. And it's very different from the West Coast. You know,
I bet.
Have you ever been out here in this area?
No, I haven't been to the Midwest. I've only been on the southern part of the United States because I had moved to Florida at one point. And so I've never been up that way. I would like to make it up that way.
Oh, you should. It is very, very beautiful over here, especially because the seasons change. And to actually see, you know, fall leaves, which is something very alien out in the West Coast.
Yeah. And when you do these type of tours, are you like, do you have to hit certain food spots? Is it one of those things where it's like, okay, well, we're in Detroit, so they're known for this. I mean, I don't even know what kind of food Detroit's known for.
I guess they have their Detroit-style pizza, which I'm still not too familiar with. I mean, I know Chicago definitely and New York-style pizza, but Detroit, all I know is that it's square. But there's like, but we do have square pizzas out in the West Coast as well. So,
right. So.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, I try to, but, you know, it's like I said, time is limited.
That's so true.
You know, sometimes we don't really get to eat anything.
You're like, oh, I'll just bring some nuts in the car or stop at some convenience store.
Yeah. I mean, you know, fortunately, you know, because I for this year I went meatless. So fortunately, in this day and age, there are a lot more, I guess, vegetarian options to choose from
to,
you know, decades ago. So
that's true.
Yeah,
that's true. So how would you explain your style of music?
My style of music? That's always a tough question for me to answer because I never really know what to say. But I believe the person's name was Matt, and he's from this band Guilty Strangers. He describe my music as Western punk noir, which I do think is a very accurate description of the music I play. You know,
I could see that.
Yeah,
I have my own thing I've been listening because, you know, we're doing the interview and I wanted to hear your music and really listen to it. And
what did you think?
I'm going to date myself now here. I feel like it's a cross between Violent Femmes and Social Distortion.
Okay.
Like a little bit of a sound mix that way.
Yeah, I could totally see that and understand that.
Maybe from my Gen X female standpoint.
I'm not offended by that description.
So okay, good.
We're okay.
I know. I'm always like, oh, should I tell them?
Right. But no, I think what you said and what Matt said is a really good description of what I do at least at this point, moment in time, because right now it's just me, a guitar, and my voice. I know I sent you a link to my previous work when I had a full band. I'm not sure if you were able to hear that and to compare. But as far as what I'm going for right now, that's pretty much it. Western punk noir, violent femme, social distortion. I think what I like to give out energy wise is like this, you know, rebel, renegade type of vibe, energetic vibe, because I do really think that energy, raw energy, is very lacking in today's music standards, or at least in rock and roll, I believe. And a lot of the stuff you would associate with rock and roll is like very lacking. So that's one of my main points. I would like to go and, you know, bring out and share with people, because, you know, that's what rock and roll is, at least in my opinion.
No, I totally agree. And yeah, I mean, you know, I'll see tons. That's why I really love to kind of stick to local musicians, because you guys are really putting it out there and like super passionate when you're at your shows and giving it all, because you're doing the thing. And I feel like, yeah, it's like a lot of the mainstream music these days, it's not people grinding anymore and starting small. It's like they're already just trying to go for the big, you know, it's all the competition shows and stuff. And so, yeah, it's not really the passionate songwriters and creating all of the music for, yeah, it's just, it's different. It's definitely different nowadays. And, yeah. And I think that you local musicians really put on better shows.
I mean, we're in the age of like, you know, we're in the age of TikTok or Snapchat or whatever is out there, which I don't really use. I use Instagram, but in that age where things are very quickly disposable and you just have to keep thinking of new ways to portray something, things are so they go by so fast that, you know, people don't have enough time to digest it to even let it affect them, you know, as opposed
That's
to
true.
Years ago where we didn't have any of that stuff. All we had was like, say, a magazine description of a review from a concert or a picture, you know, you just have to go by that. But now everything is so accessible. Everything's so fast paced. You know, it's like you don't have time to really, like I said, digest it all, take it all in. It's just bam, 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 you know. So,
nor do I think very many people know how to do that anymore, right? Because they're used to that lifestyle, and then they get bored quickly. And it's like, oh no, why don't you just kind of take this moment and really listen to something, you know, put your headphones on and and like you said, kind of digest what it is in the moment. And that's why when I was listening to your music, I definitely wore headphones and really wanted to hear all the sounds and all the lyrics and really focus on what I was listening to, because I think, and you know, that's where music gets you, because most songwriters are writing about life experiences and then people can relate to it. And that's the best thing, I think, when someone's like, hey, you know, that song that you just sang, that's like totally about my life, or whatever they get from. I love that. So.
No, definitely. I agree. That's what got me into music. And that is why, one of the reasons why I listen to music and why I wanted to go in this direction is because, you know, when I was growing up, I was very much a loner, much like I am now. Some things never change. And all I had was music. So when I write music, I want it to be I want to be connecting with the listener, with the audience member in some way, whether it's the music or the words or the performance or, you know, visually, just something so they don't feel so alone, you know, going through this journey of life, you know, because for me, that's what really helped me go through a lot
in my
life to get over certain things was the music and connecting with music. So that's, you know, I definitely share that sentiment with you, and that's what I want to do.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the Bay Area, up around the San Francisco area. I was up there for pretty much 22 years, and then I moved down to Los Angeles to that area, and I've been living there ever since. So
I lived in LA at one point. I moved to LA when I was 18, and I lived there for 13 years. And
were you a runaway?
No, I actually moved there because I kind of didn't have a choice. And my mom had met my stepdad and moved with him. And it was like, why, you can't go with us. So yeah. My sister had already lived in Manhattan Beach. And she was just like, because I grew up in Riverside. And she's like, get out of there. Just come live in LA. And I did. Yeah. And it was hard at first. I mean, you coming from the Bay Area to LA, I think that's a little bit easier of a transition because the Bay Area is kind of hustle and bustle. But going from like the Inland Empire to LA so hard for me. And I was like, whoa, you know what I mean? You're only 18. And most people that go to LA are young. And then you work with all of these people that are trying to be in the industry somehow. And they're like either actors or musicians and all that stuff. And yeah, and you just kind of learn how to live that lifestyle, I guess. The LA lifestyle, it's so much different than anywhere else.
It is. Yeah, that's very true. It is very different, very out there, very strange at times. You know, the whole LA mentality. And it's usually the people who've moved from different places to LA that make it strange. You meet the natives, you know, the people that actually are from LA, and they're totally not like that. They're totally different. You know, they're real people. And it's everybody else that gives LA, everybody else is giving LA a bad name.
Right.
Yeah.
Or you have, you know, all the children of nepotism out there.
That is very true. I didn't realize, you know, I knew it was happening, but I didn't realize to what extent it seems like everybody is connected to somebody. It makes a lot of things difficult, but I don't know whether it was that, you know, life would just throw stuff at you to make itself difficult anyway.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I know, because it's like one of the managers I used to work with, her dad was Herbie Hancock, and she was a manager for California Pizza Kitchen. Wow. And it's like, yeah, it's just like so weird. There's just all of this connection everywhere, no matter where you go in LA. It's like
California Pizza Kitchen. There you go.
Right. So what age did you say, like, you started actually writing music? So you were, you know, you said you were kind of always a loner. And did you start writing at a young age? Did it take you a while to kind of figure out how to songwrite?
16, you know, that was probably the first time I ever wrote a song. I'm sure it was very basic, very, you know, I mean, you're 16. What do you know? You know, what do I know when I'm 16? And, you know, totally copying another person's format, their style, which is, you know, that's pretty much how you start. And then throughout the years, you just keep listening to different things. And I've always been open to music. And, you know, you learn or you just stay the same. And I've always been a person, I still am, I'm always a person of moving forward and always changing, always trying new things. So I think that for me, at some point in my mid-20s is when like my songwriting started to get actually pretty good. And I began to form an identity, at least for me, my identity, my songwriting style. My, you know, as far as style goes, you know, my voice is a totally different thing.
Right. You know,
because you, again, you end up copying some other, you know, another person's style, another person's voice until you form something of your own.
Right. Who were your influences back then?
Back when I was 16, mostly a lot of punk bands and a lot of goth industrial bands.
Okay.
For the first, I mean, the Ramones, definitely. The Cramps, another one. Guns N' Roses was a huge one. Metallica, a lot of that stuff. That's what I was listening to at the time. Sisters of Mercy.
Okay.
Bauhaus. A lot of these, those style bands.
Right.
Nowadays it would be, you ask me, it's like, oh, I love Joni Mitchell, I love David Bowie, I love Lauryn Nero, I love Robin, Lily Allen. It's very different. How I am now is very different to how I was back then as far as music.
Right. For sure. For sure you changed, because I never was a Beatles fan until I actually started writing music.
Oh, nice.
And playing the guitar. Yeah. And even, you know, I started playing the guitar at 17, but I didn't understand the Beatles quite yet. And right. everyone was always like, oh, the Beatles, the Beatles, the Beatles and everything. Yeah. And I was just like, whatever. And then when I started actually writing lyrics, that's when I was like, oh, the Beatles, they're brilliant.
Right.
Not that they're an influence, but then I understood why so many people were like these huge Beatles fans.
Yeah.
And now I'm a Beatles fan. Yeah. Right, so, right. you know, where I never was growing up. So,
yeah. You know, I mean, same with me too, with the Beatles. I never liked the Beatles. And then all of a sudden I did because I listened to every single album, which is what I do when I latch onto an artist. I listen to everything. I read everything. I digest it all.
Yeah.
I take it all in and really figure out their life and their journey to see why they're like that, why they write that way. I mean, with the Beatles, again, it's, if you listen to their records, they constantly move forward.
So, right.
You know, Rubber Soul doesn't sound like Please Please Me, you know.
Right.
Abbey Road doesn't sound like Yellow Submarine. But you can read it from beginning to end. You really do see the path and how they reach that point. You do see the connections and the bridges between each album.
Yeah. The White Album's my favorite of theirs.
Yeah, I love the White Album too. the White Album's my favorite. Then Rubber Soul is a really good one.
And yeah.
The first record, I think, Meet the Beatles, but it's the very first one that they released record. So those are probably my favorite, my top three.
Did you watch the documentary that they have out? That's
Get Back one. The one that took like forever.
Like 4 hours
to watch.
Long. Yeah.
I watched that over Thanksgiving weekend. So my whole Thanksgiving weekend was planned. It was very interesting. What did you think?
I actually haven't watched it yet.
And oh, you haven't? Oh,
yeah,
you better watch
it. I really want to watch it. Yeah, because I do love those deep dives and like the old footage. You know, I heard that it's amazing because there's another really good musical documentary that's long. That takes, it's like you have to watch it over. It's the Tom Petty one.
Oh, that one's good though. That one's a little bit more, it is long, but it is fast paced. It's not like the Beatles one. The Beatles one is like an endurance because the Beatles one, there's, with the Tom Petty one, there's a lot of talking heads.
Yeah.
This one, the Beatles one is you're sitting in the room basically. So there's long pauses where they're
doing anything. Okay.
There's times where they keep repeating certain things. You know, but there is a lot of interesting things in there. Like one of the their songwriting, how they wrote songs. It was really interesting to see that, you know, I mean, I always thought like, oh, people just go in and go, I got a song, let's go play it, which it is true. People do that. But in the movie, Paul would come in with a bass line and then he would play it over and over and over again. And then George would come in and then Ringo would kind of stand around and they would start like going, throwing in vocal melodies, backup vocals. A guitar line here. So it's very interesting to hear how something like, you know, Get Back, which is one of the examples they throw in the movie, how that starts out as this little seed of a riff and then it expands to throughout the movie into the song. So it's very interesting.
Now I'm really going to have to watch that doc because my cover band sings Get Back.
Oh, really?
Well, I have to do the backup on it. And so, so it's like one of those things. Well, now I'm going to watch it and probably really like the song afterward.
All right.
So where was your first show that you played and how old were you?
I guess first show was at a high school thing. I know it was like at a high school thing. And that was probably my first show ever playing music. As my first real show at a venue, had to be up at this place called Bottom of the Hill in San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
It's still there, by the way. And it's like one of those institutions in San Francisco that everybody knows. It's, you know, much like CBGB's was in New York.
Oh, okay.
Bottom of the Hill in San Francisco. So that was probably my first real show. And it was good. It was, you know, I thought everything was cool. I wouldn't want to see the video now, how the video playback is now. But at the time, I thought it was really cool. Yeah.
What neighborhood in San Francisco is that one in?
Oh, man.
I know the
name escapes me, but I know it's not deep in the city. It's not deep
in
San Francisco, but it's on a hill.
Oh, okay.
Bottom of the hill.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, So, but it's not in the city. It's like kind of like at the edge of the city.
Okay. Yeah. Do you remember how old you were when you did your first show?
That one, probably 20 or 21, one of those.
Yeah. Was it a 21 and over bar? Because I'm like, what if you're, it if was you're a 21. Only 20, do they let you play there?
They do. They do let you, if you're under age of 21 up, but they do let you play. Sometimes they let you play and then you have to leave afterwards. A lot of times they would put X Sharpie, like Sharpie and X on your hands, because yeah. Then they know that you can't drink. Yeah. So, but I don't think at the time they didn't do anything. So.
And did you play with a band there, or were you solo artists?
No, I was playing with a band.
Okay.
It was a band, and it, after that show, we did, I think, maybe one more, and then it completely folded.
that, As yeah. things do in this world.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you know, it was starting to, the guitarist was saying a bunch of stuff that was like, It's looking back now, it was like, well, you know, you're talking more about yourself than you are of the band. So,
right. Yeah. Musicians are a different breed.
Yeah, very much
you know, I mean, it's everyone's got their creative parts and minds and egos and, you know, and all that, especially when you're younger. I just feel that. And then you start to get a little more seasoned, and then it's like you appreciate each other. And
then the ego comes out every once in a while.
Yeah.
I don't, it never goes away. You just keep it in check.
Right. Yeah. You humble it.
Yeah, basically.
So you played with a band up until recently.
Right. I played, well, the dramedy stuff has been off and on. I would put a band together, and then the band would never stay committed, and people would leave, come and go. So I was never able to get a stable band together. So when that happened, I would go off and play bass for another band, or play guitar for another band, or, you know, X, Y, and Z. And then eventually I go back to it, try and put a band together, cycle repeats. People leave, then I would play in other stuff. And then very recently, which is pretty much the beginning of this year, the tail end of last year, I did have a band together. Or 2020, I should say. I did have a band together, but it didn't really quite work out. And I didn't really want to start playing shows with them because the dynamic was, you know, there was just something really unbalanced with the dynamic.
Right.
Yeah. And then I wasn't really feeling it as much because of that. So I was going to quit music in 2022.
Oh.
I was like, yeah, I actually was going to quit music. But then I thought to myself, but I wasn't quite sure yet. So I kind of went like, okay, I'm going to roll the dice. A buddy I know is playing a show up in San Jose, up in the Bay Area. I'll ask him if he needs another act. And if he says yes, then that'll be me continuing with music. And
oh, wow. Left it in the hands of
I
me.
Did. Yeah. So then, you know, I sent out the email. He said he needed an act. So I said, okay, I guess this is what I'm going to do. But I, you know, before going into it and getting back into the whole game, I decided there's a few things I wanted to do. I was like, okay, well, I got to do things different. I can't do things the way I've done it before. I can't, you know, I just didn't feel right. I didn't feel comfortable performing how I did before, presenting it the way I did before. I definitely couldn't go under the moniker The Dramedy because that's kind of more of a band name.
Right.
So I made a decision. Okay, well, it's just me. It's just going to be me. I've always been the constant. I'm just going to have to go out with my name. That's it. Dave Dramedy. That way it's just me. That way people know it's just going to be me.
Right.
It's just going to be one guy. And, you know, if things pick up later on, I could add people, but I'm still always going to be the constant. I'm still always going to be the main person in the band.
Right.
Until someone really does want to stay in the band. Then things will change. So that was one. So I did that, which I never really wanted to do. Second, I didn't want to perform the way I used to perform, which was more erratic and energetic, more punky. I needed to I wanted to portray energy, but I need to streamline it. So
yeah.
So I decided, okay, this is how I'm going to do it. Visually, I was like, well, I don't want to dress up how I always dressed up before. And I kind of want to get rid of that identity.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, what can I do? So I didn't want to get really extravagant. I wanted to keep things simple. So hence I got the hat and I got the mask. And I figured, okay, this is going to be it. Everything I do has to be like this, you know, right. Day of Dramedy, this is it. And then the domino effect keeps going. I was like, okay, well, I can't have all my website up and show everything I've done before. So I basically took down everything I did. I took down all the albums off the Bandcamp. I took down all the pictures that showed my face. I changed the logo. I changed the
whole thing.
I basically everything I did pre-2022, I totally wiped out. I did it on the Instagram. I did it on like whatever socials I had. I took everything down as much as I could and basically started fresh.
That just this year?
Yeah.
And that's amazing. Yeah. That's a huge makeover.
Right. That's why I was saying it's kind of a rebrand. And I have to do it like this, because if I don't, then, you know, I don't want things to be confused. I just want to get rid of the identity and start from square one. I couldn't necessarily go, oh, can you book me? Here's the music, and then show them something that's like a full band, and then have to explain that, well, it's just going to be me. It's not going to be the full band.
Yeah.
So I had to also quickly record these solo demos, you know, to send people. Yeah. So, but I think it was worth it. You know, I'm happy I did it, and I like what I'm doing now.
Good.
Yeah, I'm keeping busy, which is great. You know, I mean, the music game is still the same, but at least what I've done in the past is helping me with what I've done now, and playing in other bands and touring with other bands. You know, I've built up a network of people that I could, you know, contact to help me out as far as shows go, or
that's the best though. Really. I mean, networking is the best thing to do. Any industry, but yeah, especially entertainment. When you know people and you can definitely, you know, call them and talk and get hookups, that's the best thing. So when you had to record these new demos, how do you come up with all of the backtracking for it? Do you have to play the instruments, or what do you,
right now when I did it, it was just me and the guitar. So I just, that's it.
Okay.
And that's all I've been doing. Like if you went to the website or the Bandcamp and you saw the stuff I have up, it's just basically me and the guitar, but
okay.
My releases have been in keeping with the theme of being this rebel renegade loner, desperado bandit of sorts. All the recordings I've done and released on my bank haven't been recorded on my phone. I record every single show I do, and I just release it as is.
Okay. You know,
very minimal effects put on them. Because the reason for me doing that is I've made the good sounding album. I've made the good sounding single and all the stuff, all the production, everything. And I did sell stuff. I did sell merch and music, but you know, at the end of the day, I wasn't breaking even, and that's right. Just the game, you know. So I figured, well, you know, if I'm doing that and I'm not breaking even, then you know, I could just release this, and it doesn't cost me any money,
right?
And for the most part, it's, you know, you more or less know exactly what the sound is, and it's also kind of the attitude and you know, the attitude I want to portray as far as Dave Dramedy goes, because like I said, it's like this renegade, this rock and roll rebel. I'm doing things that's against the grain that a lot of other bands are doing with slick production, you know, or if people want to do a very lo-fi recording, they'll record it and make it lo-fi. Mine is lo-fi because it really is lo-fi.
Okay. So, yeah. Yeah. There have been, because my son plays music as well, and he bought this, like this old school phone looking contraption, because he saw that they did a recording to make it sound like a vinyl record, and the way that you record it through that old phone thing, but you plug it into your computer.
Right.
Okay, you have fun with that. You do what you need to do.
Right. Or you can just use your, or you just use your cell phone to record, and there you go.
Exactly.
But I mean, I'm into, you know, I'm already thinking, even though I'm alone, I'm also thinking of what I can do next and how I could get a fuller sound. So I do have some plans for the coming months of how to get a fuller sound. You know, I'm experimenting with backing tracks, you know, lights, and that. So I do have some stuff that I want to try out in the next coming months. Right now on tour, it's just me and Bar, because that's basically how it's built. Since the other artist, Thanatos, he's an artist with just a guitar in his voice.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I mean, Jewel started out that way, so...
A lot of people. I mean, Joni Mitchell started out that way. Laura Nero had just her and a piano. Tori Amos, her and a piano. I mean, you know, to me, this is just the first step into bigger things.
Right.
Yeah.
What kind of guitars do you use?
Do you
use like a Stratocaster or a Telecaster?
No, I have... The guitar I use... is a hollow body, a Schecter hollow body. One of the bands I played with before had a sponsorship with Schecter, so I was able to buy a lot of their high-end guitars for at a very, very, very affordable price.
Oh, that's nice.
So I've always wanted a hollow body, so I bought the hollow body, and that's what I've been using, electric hollow body through a Fender combo amp. But for this tour I did now, I bought a Michael Kelly electric acoustic. I've never had an electric acoustic. So I figured
electric acoustics.
Yeah, and this one's really cool. I like it a lot. I'm glad I bought it. It was between that or a Takamine. And this one just had the Michael Kelly I bought had a very interesting shape. It just felt right for me. You know, the look, it just resonated with me. The Takamine sounded a little bit better, but you know, we're going more for vibe.
Yeah.
At least for me.
Well, I feel like, when you're a musician and you play the guitar, when you go get new guitars, it's like you have to try them out almost. And like this one, it's like a Goldilocks. This one's too cold.
Yeah. It's a relationship of sorts, you know?
It really is. And I feel like,
we're going on this journey together.
From the one that you're like, is the one.
So I went down, bought one. I mean, one, because I always wanted an electric acoustic, and two, it was easier to bring, because if I brought the electric, I would have to look for an amp over here in the East Coast, Midwest to borrow, because I definitely wasn't going to go and check my amp in there, because that's
awesome.
So it was more of a, you know, financial thing as well.
Right. Yeah. I know. And there's all those people too, because I just got my first electric acoustic a couple years ago. I got a Taylor.
Taylor. Oh, I love Taylors.
Yeah.
Very high end, but they sound really good.
And when I was really wanting one for years, and everyone's like, well, you can just make your acoustic guitar electric. And I'm just like, I don't know how to do that.
It's different too. It's very different. You know, you could get one of those pickups that you put in the hole of the guitar, and it just sounds different.
Right.
If you get an electric acoustic, it's like all you need to do is plug in.
Right.
You don't have to worry about anything else. So I think you made the good choice, the right choice.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference too.
I'm sure it does, especially a Taylor guitar.
To be able to plug in, it's so different. Right. Yeah, compared to my old acoustic, it's like, wow, now I got good sound, and you can put through a pedal, and
you can move around if you want to move around.
So who would be? So you're doing some gigs outside. So you do mostly gigs in LA, right? And then
That's the strangest thing. LA is like the one place, like, I don't really do a lot of shows.
That's pretty amazing, because normally LA, I don't know how it is now, but back when I lived there, all of my friends were in bands. And yeah. I mean, we would go to their shows. You know, one of my friend's band played the Viper Room and day. I think it was where House of Blues is now. I think it was called the Key Club, or, you know, there's just like.
There was a Key Club over on the Sunset Strip, which was walking distance from the Rainbow and from the Roxy and the Whiskey and all that stuff.
And then so it was just all about that, you know, and like, some of like my ex-brother-in-law was in a punk band. They played at the Whiskey. And it was all about the Sunset Strip. Like, if you could get on there, then you are almost there.
It is very different. It is not even like that anymore. Like, the Sun Strip basically doesn't exist. It's still there, but it's not like the hot spot. For a while, it was Echo Park and Silver Lake. It still kind of is. But now it's, there's like these little places like in downtown, like Ham and Eggs. There's a place called Harvard and Stone. There's, what else is there? There's just all these little places around. And I think the weighted, there's the Corbin Bowl over in Tujunga. I think now it's about getting into a scene, which is pretty much what you had to do. But more so now, it's to contact bands. It's to contact promoters who put on shows. You know, it's very like blah, blah, blah presents this night.
So
who's presenting the night, contact them to see if you can do it. You see who the bands are playing, contact them to see if they have a opening. But, you know, it sounds easy, but it's not, because it's a very clicky, scene. So if you're not part of that click, then, you know, it's going to be pretty difficult to get into. But if you do get really good with them, then you may have, you know, an easier time doing it. As for me, I've never really been part of a clique. I did try to go to, I do try, but you know, you just have to go with your gut.
And
from past experiences, I'm not just going to, you know, I'll network as much as I can, but I'm not going to bend over backwards for X, Y, and Z. Show, you know, it's just getting, for me, it's more about energy. It's more about what I want to do. So if I get a good, you know, I've been getting better gigs, like in San Diego. I've been getting good gigs in Arizona. Pittsburgh was a really good show. So I'd rather, you know, I'd rather travel somewhere else and do shows as opposed to playing in LA. You know,
and cool that you can do that, though. I mean, that's really hard.
It is very hard. It is hard. It does take a lot of, it's not even about money. It's more about just drive. It's more about passion. It's more about, it's like that. It's like, do you have the passion? Do you have the drive to go out and do it, to leave your house, so to speak, and just venture out on a journey? I think you're going to have to do it anyway. And,
If you're a musician and you're striving to get big, that's what eventually what you're going to do. You're never going to be home. You're going to always be out on tour.
You're going to have to, you're just going to have to do it, you know, doing interviews while you're on tour, you know, doing this.
Exactly. You know? And with Zoom, now you can do that.
You could. It's not just a phone call anymore, you know, that cuts out and everybody's racking up, money for the long distance call. But yeah, I mean, but I was never, I mean, I like to play in LA. And another thing is, like, nobody goes out in LA. You know, I played there. Nobody has gone out. I've gone other places. I've gotten better reception. So why am I going to go play in a place that nobody cares? So
that's true. That's so funny that LA is like that now, just because it used to not be. And those areas that you were mentioning that, you know, before, those were areas that no one would ever go to, because
because it was like very, it was like a bad neighborhood.
And downtown, it's out in the middle of nowhere. Like, it's far compared to, you know, the West Side or whatever.
Right.
And there was this one place in Highland Park, when I used to live in LA. It was called Mr. T's Bowl.
And, yeah, that's not there anymore.
Yeah, and Highland Park back then was like, oh, we got to go to Highland Park? But now it's all gentrified. It's so different.
Actually, people go to Highland Park now.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's like a cool neighborhood. But I remember a couple. So my old roommate and I, we went there a few times to see some of our friends' bands. And one night we were there. This is going to date me again. And we're outside in the parking lot. We're smoking our cigarettes. And we're dressed in all of our goth gear. And this bubbly girl comes up to us with her flyer. And she goes, hi, my name's Anna Nalick, and I'm performing next weekend if you guys want to come to my show. And she gives us the flyer. And we literally, like, looked at the flyer, and I was just, and I pretty much, like, tossed it on the ground. I smoked, I took a puff of my cigarette. I go, I pretty much blew the smoke in her face, and I was like, so? And then I think maybe it was like 2 years later, I was getting ready for work and I had like VH1 on or something.
Yeah, and there she is.
I was there, like, you go. Oh my gosh, there's the chick that we blew smoke in her face.
There you go.
Yep, you never know. Don't blow cigarette smoke in people's faces, people. No. Don't be a snob.
Very true. That is very true. But you know, I mean, LA, I mean, if you're not from LA, go to LA and play, because it's another city you're going to have to hit. And it's always exciting. At least I find it exciting going somewhere else to play. So if you're from San Diego, come up to LA and play it. You know, I'll trade you. I'll go down there to San Diego, which I am playing November 5th, Black Cat.
Yes, you're going to be at Black Cat Club Saturday, November 5th.
Thanks to Magical Animals, because, you know, they set it up and they asked me.
So that's so cool. I just saw them last weekend.
Yeah, I saw that. I was actually supposed to play a show with them back in the first time I played there this year. But I played with Poison in the Darkness also, and Magic Animals was supposed to be on that bill.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And they had to cancel out because one of them had COVID, Magical Animals. So,
okay.
Yeah. So fortunately, they went and, you know, booked this show and asked me to play. So it'll be my next show, San Diego, right when I get back from this whole Midwest, East Coast jaunt.
Detroit tonight your last stop, or
Tomorrow I go to Chicago. That's going to be my last stop.
Oh, okay.
I'm looking forward to that, because I've never played Chicago.
I've never been in Chicago.
Oh, you haven't?
Yeah,
it's pretty good. It's got the Art Institute Museum, which is very, very, very wonderful. So you got to check that out, and the architecture tour if you take the boat. There's a river architect tour.
Awesome.
Yeah, that was really good. I last time I was here, I went on that. Well worth it.
I have a friend who just moved there, and she loves it. She lives in downtown Chicago. She doesn't live in the suburbs. She lives right downtown, and she's like, this was meant for me. Yeah. And so, yeah, it looks beautiful. I'm sure the weather is, I mean, I'm a Southern Californian, so I don't know if I would be able to handle that type of weather.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm from San Francisco, so I prefer the cold over than the heat, because you can always get warm in the cold. You can't get cold in the heat.
Yeah.
If you took off all your clothes, ain't going to happen. Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, so. So who would you say is like a guilty pleasure artist that you would listen to?
Guilty pleasure. There's no guilty pleasure artists. They're all pleasures to me. I don't listen. I listen to good music. Okay. I listen to good music. I listen to a lot of, you know, I mean, I mentioned I listen to Robin, you know. She's that singer that sang Dancing on My Own. That's like a famous. I like Lily Allen. I like a lot of female singers, you know, especially 60s foreign female singers.
Oh. Really
like, whether it's from France or Europe or Germany. Like, I really like Franz Gall. She's a 60s French singer. Sandy Shaw, I really like, another singer from the 60s. Sylvie Vartan. She's a French singer. Yeah, it's a lot of stuff like that. I really like. I don't think it's a guilty pleasure, but I mean, I like you know, ABBA's great, Roxette, like stuff that people probably wouldn't think that I listen to. Or
right,
I like Joni Mitchell is way up there. You know, Laura Nero. I always mention her because I really love her music. If her one album, Eli and the 13th Confession, that's probably one of my top three favorite albums
of all time.
Yeah, that one. So you should check it out.
Yeah, I will have to.
Yeah.
You know, and she has all the French, all the French singers that you listen to. So it's all in French?
Yeah, it's all in French. They do have a lot of these singers, they did French albums. Sometimes they did English ones, they did German, you know, they did Spanish. Like they did all different languages for their songs. I mean, I could send you some artists I like and you can go check them out and then let me know.
Yeah. And so when you listen to stuff like that and you kind of listen to it over and over, then it's like a French lesson.
Right? Kinda, but I still can't speak French. It's more like the inflections and how they phrase things. I mean, I don't know what they're saying, but just like,
right.
It's, you know, the music and the melody. I listen to all that.
Yeah. And foreign music is way different. I feel. It is
very much so. Even like the techno, like techno pop, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. The emotion in the foreign music and the singing, I think is most of the time when I've heard it's like, wow, that person's singing their heart out.
Yeah. I guess actually, you know what? I guess if there was an artist that falls under the guilty pleasure, it would be Kylie Minogue. I'm a really
Kylie
Minogue. I listen to all, like I have most of her albums, you know, so I'm not just really a casual fan.
Well, you're not the only one that, I mean, huge.
Yeah, she is huge, but you know, she is huge.
Yeah,
but still, you know, I really, you know, whenever something new comes out, I'm always like, oh, what is this? I even went out and got her wine. She has her own wine.
Oh wow. Yeah.
I think the one that's sold here, it's mostly sold in Australia or in Europe, but the one that they sell here that you could buy at BevMo is the Prosecco Rosé. So
Well, we'll have to tag Kylie Minogue in this podcast. Never listen to it. Your number one fan, Dave Dromedy. Yeah. Come and see a show and meet him.
There you go. Or just fly me out to Australia. How about that?
Awesome. Well, thanks for taking the time out of your tour.
Yeah. No, thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
And I'm glad we got this all set up. See you in person. Likewise.
And then
I will see you in person for real.
November 5th.
Everyone that in San Diego that if you're listening to this and you want to go see Dave perform, he will be at Black Cat Club Saturday, November 5th. The doors open at 9 p.m. And then you can find him on Instagram at The Drum. And Spotify, and then you have a website as well?
Yeah, website is www.thedramedy.com, and it's very easy, and that's Dramedy, spelled Dramedy, because some people say
there's two. Oh, that's right. I didn't even think about that. I didn't catch that part of it. Yeah.
The best place to catch me would be the Instagram. That's the best place to catch me. That's where I post most of the stuff. That's where, you know, I answer messages if I get messages there. So that's the best.
You're mostly active there. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just find Instagram the easiest one and the best way. Yeah.
And it's kind of like a good middle ground between like Twitter and Snapchat and TikTok and Facebook.
Right.
And it's like the good middle ground where, you know, you don't have to do anything weird, like a video with bunny ears or something.
So, right. Yeah, that's true. So, and then this won't air today, but if people are in the Detroit area, they could see you.
If not, you can go to the place and see where I play.
Right.
Which is Smalls. So.
But this will definitely air before the 5th. So hopefully people will make the show and and come and see you in Magical Animals. And And then I will definitely, I talked to Magical Animals too, and I'm like, oh, I need to do an interview with you too.
Right.
I love how it's all connected that way.
It is. The music scene is very small. So
it is. But,
thank you for having me on your show.
You're welcome. And so thank you, listeners. And we will see you next time on the Local Treble Clef.